This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I'm going to go hard here on a Sunday morning and just tell you that I think the NFL Combine, as entertaining as it is utterly and completely worthless. Okay? Thank you. It's entertaining. But listen, nothing is more exciting than watch a 315-pound guy run a sub-540. It's amazing. I love the press conferences. I love the skill that these guys have. And certainly, not to take anything away from it being impressive, but simply put, these guys just prepare for doing well at the combine. And I would argue that there is very little that transfers over to NFL skill. And I'll put this out there that I was listening to a national host this week, and so this take is not necessarily borrowed but agreed with from a national host. And so I started doing some research about what some of the best combine performances were. And the names and the times and things that they did, albeit impressive, these guys are – most of them are not NFL stars. Now, look at the 40-yard dash. Who holds record? Xavier Worthy last year, 4.21 seconds. He did okay last year. Mm-hmm. But then you get into some other names. Kalon Barnes in 2022. Rondell Menendez from Eastern Kentucky. He got Chris Johnson
him?
In 08. Exactly. Rick Woolen, Dry Archer. Nate Wiggins in 2024. Jalen Myrick, Minnesota. And then the bench press. Mike Kudla. Remember him? No.
Yeah.
Harrison Phillips is on there. But I would venture to guess, or I'm going to say this, and I'm curious, Pete, because you lived in this world way more than I did. Way more than I do. I don't think there is some value in it in the sense of if you're a fringe guy trying to get on the radar, I think it's worthwhile. Mm-hmm. But other than that, this is just the NFL's way of staying relevant in a dead month where they normally don't have anything. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I was a part of the combine. I was a part of the combine when I was coming out of college at the University of Minnesota. We happened to do it. But what they used to do was they would go to the city that had hosted the Super Bowl, so it happened to be in New Orleans. And some of the guys even went out stupidly and had a bit of a good time while we were down there. even before competing in some of these things, which is probably not very well the best way to put yourself out there. But yeah. I totally hear what you're saying, Dave. I really do. I think, you know, one of the reasons why it exists still, they have 5 million people watching it last year, and I would bet you they beat that number this year. I haven't seen the numbers yet. And these guys are freak athletes. But I think to your point, and I think it's valid, and I don't disagree, because I ironically happen to have been doing the same thing this year during the combine, starting on Thursday, where I was looking at, well, what are some of these records? What is the bench press? What is the 40? What is the three cone? All these different things that they do, and the names are obscure. But the reason I do think it's still something that's interesting is because there are those guys that are sort of in the middle and or maybe not known enough about, not enough, you know, tape has been looked at with these guys, and you want to say, okay, good player, but does he have that next level of speed, strength, size, whatever it is, right? And I think for those guys, it's very, very much something important. I'll give you a great example. One of our Golden Gophers, Ja Joyner. I think that people see his numbers. They know who he is. They know enough about him. He's a heck of a football player, and when he's on the field, you know it. But they don't know, does he have enough speed with his size to be able to do this? So, you know, you get the opportunity to run a 40 like he did, and he ran a 4.6 40. He's a big person. You know, he's 6'5" and 265-pound kid, and he's moving at 4.6. That's pretty impressive. So I think that's really what it's all about, Dave, when it's all said and done. And it's fun, I think, for the players, but then there's that next group of guys and some of the sleepers. There's sleepers in both directions, though. I think there are sleepers that, you know, there's a guy this year, his name's Charles Grant from William & Mary. Now, how many people have seen William & Mary? I don't think I've seen a television.
I would venture you have, but most of our listeners it's not.
But you know, the only way you could possibly have seen him really this past year probably would have been, well, you had somebody else is playing William & Mary, you happened to see him on TV. Maybe, if they did anything on TV. But he's a heck of a player, and he had a very good combine workout. And then there's guys like Abdul Carter, who's supposed to be allegedly the first pick in the draft this year. He's the Penn State kid. We all have watched him. He's unbelievable. He's got all the talent in the world. And he's sitting out, so but we already know about him, right? So now you've got to look at some of the players that are a little less known. You know, you go to an Iowa State, for instance. You know, they're just not seen enough. We've seen Ohio State and Michigan and, you know, all the big names, Alabama and Georgia, and you know what these guys are as players. But I do think there is something to be said about certain things that they do at the combine that do make sense to me. But it's fun, Dave. I think that's why they still do it. It's great for everybody to just see what athletes they are. This is probably what they ought to do for the Pro Bowl.
You know what? Kind of that might be the smartest thing. You're right.
Because
yeah,
you know,
I don't disagree with that, actually.
Yeah, well, we were talking about that, you and I, and other than hockey, I think most of these, you know, things are awful, and the NBA being the very worst of them all. But the NFL is not that far up behind because they don't really play the games anymore like they once did, and that was the fun part of it, but they don't do that anymore. So because of that, this might be something that they do. But you know what? Then everybody's going to say, well, what if he pulls his hamstring? Okay. You can't really win with everybody on this thing, but it is great to watch these guys. I'm impressed, and it's amazing to see a gentleman who's 6'6" and 320 pounds run a 4.6 40. For a guy like me, and I think there's a lot of guys like me out there, of the people that watch. I mean, think about it. We had 112 million people watch the Super Bowl, or maybe even more than that. I'm not surprised at all to see that they're going to have ratings that are probably going to beat last year's 5 million mark, I would say.
It's fun to watch. I think there is, and I think we're always so hungry for more NFL. I mean, the NFL is king. It is all the way around. But I always think of, when I think of the combine, I always think of Jamarcus Russell. Jamarcus Russell, who tested off the charts, could throw the ball, you know, 80 yards on one knee, blah, 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 and all that stuff, which is great. But it meant absolutely nothing to translate to his NFL career and a very a large lack of success and lackluster NFL career.
Well, because the biggest mistake is
– and I'll use this. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the biggest mistake that these general managers do, Dave, and you're right, and I think that's the direction you're going, is they get caught up in the paper.
They do.
Put on the film first. Watch the guy play football. Watch whatever position that person is. Did they do the right things at the right times? Were they able to read defenses if they're a quarterback? Are they able to do this and that? And it's great to get the sizes and everything, but if a guy goes in as basically a third-round pick and comes out of the combine as a first-round pick, the GM's an idiot, an absolute idiot in my mind.
Yeah.
Because it's what you put on paper, and that's the Jamarcus Russells of the world, and there are many of those guys. It's too bad that we just focus on him, but it's easy because he was such a freak.
There's Matt Jones from Arkansas is another one who's passed away now, but had a great combine. Mm-hmm. They turned him into a tight end. He didn't last. And then we get these press conferences from coaches and GMs where they say absolutely nothing. And we hear about terms like optionality and all that stuff from Kwesi Doofenshmirtz. I'm pretty sure that's not a word. I don't know. Maybe he's smarter than me. But it truly is just and I think this is what it is. This is the NFL's chance to captivate an audience in a month where they have nothing. And that's what it's come down to. And I don't know how much teams take away from the interviews and what they ask these kids. And, they get up there and you get Shedeur Sanders talking about how if you don't want someone who's going to change your culture, then don't draft me. And are you kidding me? He is his dad, by the way.
And then you've got Cam Ward and some of these other guys who go in there. I mean, there's a difference between being cocky and being confident, in my opinion. And it's oftentimes you can see it right away. And the fact that Cam Ward comes out and says, I'm not going to throw at the combine because I already know I should be the first pick. Well, really? I've got my film to show it or whatever. I don't disagree with the film part of it, but not all that film looks great. I mean, when you're playing it at Miami like he did, but he played at multiple schools and it was all over the place. And suddenly, now all of a sudden that's more important than whatever talent, he'd want to show. I like the fact that our Gophers, and I know we're going to talk about this, but our Gophers, I think, represented themselves very well as far as at least showing up and doing certain things. And I know we'll talk more about that, but I'm excited about what they did in some of the things that they did. Not everybody competed, but, there's going to be that pro day too, Dave. I mean, that's when you go to the University of Minnesota
and
it's
the one
pro
that
day.
Really matters. Yeah.
Yep,
matter. I think that's the one that really matters. You've got a comfort level there. He's got receivers that he know. In terms of replicating what someone can do with what they have around them, I actually think the pro day shows more, even though it's where they're comfortable, but that's what you're going to get them eventually comfortable in your system and your facilities with their receivers. Did anyone watch the NFL Combine and your thoughts? The WCCO Talking text line, 651-461-9226. Some really very intelligent texts here, Pete. And someone texting in, a texter saying, I would say in order of importance, medical history, which is very important. Look at Todd Gurley. Agility, change of direction drills, bench press is the important at the line of play. Large men, hitting large men does not reflect the level of dedication to your craft, especially when contracts in the second year is tens of millions. That's all. Look no further. Saul and Blaine's got a couple good ones. Look no further. Troy Williamson, Christian Ponder. All really great points. All really great points. Coming up next, Matthew Collar is going to join us. We'll ask him about the combine, who did well, who didn't do well, and I'm curious about some of our Gophers as well, how they did at the combine. We'll talk to Matt Collar next. Good choice of music.
Thank you.
Is this Flock of Seagulls? Is it
close? No, this is Aha.
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 That's Utica.
Aha. But the song is Iran.
This is Take on Me. You're 0 for 2.
Wow, I'm way off. Okay. Well,
even Collar's disappointed in you. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, let's bring in Matthew Collar so you can have enough time to rip me for this. Good morning, buddy. How are you?
I mean, the song is a couple of years old, so I think
Collar wasn't even born yet.
That's the truth. Matthew, we've been debating whether the combine is actually worth anything. I think it's just a way for the NFL to keep eyeballs for another month. Pete says there is some value in it. Where do you fall on the spectrum here of this?
Well, I mean, for one, I think it is a huge get-together for the NFL to all go and, you know, work out trades for Deebo Samuel and, hey, maybe a trade for Sam Darnold to another team, right? So, you know, like there is a lot of discussions that go on there. There's meetings with agents, which is also a pretty huge deal. There's also podcasters who lost their voice by doing so many interviews, so I apologize for that. I'm still working through that. But, you know, I think that's a big part of it is, you know, the meetings with the agents and everything else. And then the interviews with the players, I think, is a pretty big deal there. The medicals with them is a really big thing that's talked about all the time. And as far as actually getting on the field, you see the top players not doing this stuff anymore because it's not going to affect their draft stock, and they could pull a hammy or something, and that could affect their offseason. But when you're talking about the middle, when you're talking about guys that could be a fringe, you know, first-round pick versus a late second-round or something, depending on what their athletic traits are, you could put it on paper and show how good of an athlete you are. I'll just give you an example. Somebody like Darius Alexander from Toledo, who I think might be on the Vikings' radar, you know, he went to Toledo. It's not like anybody really knows who this guy is, and the tape, he's playing against these MAC teams. It's not like he went to Alabama. Well, he goes to the combine, he shows that he's every bit the athlete of all the other great defensive tackles. I think for players like that, it's absolutely huge. But if you're talking about, like, you know, Ashton Jeanty or something, well, he's not going to have any problems getting drafted. But, you know, I did think I was pretty surprised by the quarterbacks not throwing here and waiting until their pro day, because I think it actually did help J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix last year to get out on the field and throw. And both of them showed how much progress, in J.J. McCarthy's case, he had made, and Penix really showed off the cannon of how hard he could throw the ball. So, yeah, I mean, I think it does matter to some extent, but it's not like you're drafting players off of what they do in this. It's only just one data point for teams.
It's kind of the bragging points too, right? I mean, I'll give you a great example. So who blew away everybody in this and already was an All-American? He was already a first-team All-SEC guy. But that safety, Nick Amunwori, 6'3", 220-pound safety, runs a 4.38. He has a 43-inch vertical. He does all of these things. That's going to be up there for a really long time, and a lot of people are talking about this guy being potentially one of the biggest freaks ever to go to the NFL draft. And I think that, you know, if he was somewhere, you know, he's a safety, because so oftentimes they're not going to go quite as high as some of the other, you know, glorious positions in football, especially quarterbacks. But maybe this did help him. You know, just one more reason to say, you know, he's not only a great football player, but this guy actually has all of the tools even off the field, where he's got the speed, he's got the strength, he's got everything that you'd want in a player like him. So I think there are some players out there, Matthew, that I think that it's great to see them. If we're going to go to the combine anyway, then go to the combine and compete. If you're not going to throw the ball, you're not going to do anything really at the combine, leave those quarterbacks all at home.
Yeah. I was pretty disappointed to see those quarterbacks decide that they were afraid to go out there and throw the ball next to Jackson Dart. You'd think if any year you wanted to do it, it would be this year. But to your point, yeah, I mean, there's always players every year that, you know, they're just in the mix, they're another guy, but then they show that their athleticism might have more upside than what people expected. I mean, even the Texas wide receiver, Matthew Golden, is it Texas? Mm-hmm. I think people thought he was fast, but is he sub 4.3 fast? The thing, though, that teams do have to be careful about, and we have seen, you know, a lot of this in the past, is somebody goes to the combine and the last impression they leave is that they are an unbelievable athlete, and teams maybe forget a little bit about, you know, some of the weaknesses of that player, and they can overrate a bad combine. Remember, Orlando Brown had that horrific combine. He turned out to be a longtime NFL starting left tackle. And how about Kyle Hamilton? I think he ran like a 4.57, and everyone went, oh, he's too slow. And the league started, you know, they let him drop, and then he becomes this great player. No surprise, I guess the Ravens didn't fall for this twice with both of those guys. But, you know, I think sometimes it could be a little bit like you can fool yourself into thinking that, but you know, I think also you're trying to learn about a lot of other parts of the game that we don't care as much about from the outside. So we love the 40s, we love the jumps, all that stuff. But as I was watching the defensive tackles the other night, I mean, the NFL teams are judging their movement skills, right? Like, what types of things will this guy have to do for our team if we draft him? And that's stuff that isn't sexy. We can't put numbers to it. We can't, you know, get excited about it. But if you're the Vikings and you're looking at those defensive tackles, you're trying to figure out what guys can handle the things that Brian Flores wants to bring. So I think that's another part of just having value. But, you know, just as liking sports, it's kind of like a cool track meet, you know, to watch. And then what I always do with the combine is I come home on Thursday and I watch Daniel Jeremiah so I can learn about all the prospects just like everybody else. So I think that's another part of it too for the audience, is to try to, you know, learn about these guys and figure out like who's your team going to draft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matthew Collar from Purple Insider joining us. All right, well, some of the bigger NFL headlines that come out this week certainly has to do with the quarterback. Matthew Stafford's going to stay in L.A., it sounds like. So, Matt, what does this mean now for Sam Darnold as these dominoes start to fall into place? Do we have a better idea coming out of the combine what's going to happen to him?
Well, I do appreciate that Stafford got a ski trip out of it from Tom Brady. That's nice. But I'm not terribly surprised that he stayed with the good team as opposed to going to the bad teams. Shocker. But, you know, for Sam Darnold, it's really funny because nobody really knows what's going to happen next year. Here's what I can tell you, that the Vikings went to Indianapolis to go out and have conversations with teams and try to figure out, will someone trade for Sam Darnold if they franchise tag him? That was their main goal of going to the combine, outside of scouting the prospects, was to find that out. And I don't know the answer, and from reading NFL insiders, I don't think anybody else knows the answer either, because those conversations happened between Chip Kelly and Kevin O'Connell, who, by the way, Chip Kelly's the OC for the Raiders. Kevin O'Connell works for Chip Kelly, so there's a connection there. And I think they're the most likely team to be interested. My thing is, there's so many teams that need quarterbacks, and Sam Darnold is far and away the best option next to, is Daniel Jones the third best option or second best option? Russell Wilson, Justin Fields. I mean, he is far and away the best option for a team that is quarterback desperate, like the Raiders, like the Giants. I don't like this quarterback class. So even some of the teams at the top, I think you're putting your life in your hands with Shedeur Sanders if you're going to draft him. So, you know, I think that there should be a team that's interested, but all those teams could just say, hey, we know that you want J.J. McCarthy to be your quarterback, so we're not going to give up assets and take on this huge cap hit. We'll just have a bidding war for Sam Darnold when he becomes a free agent. I don't know which way it's going to go, but it's one way or the other. It's like if they find a team who wants to skip the line and just get Sam Darnold, then they might be able to get a third-round pick for him. If not, then they'll get that third-round pick next year in terms of the compensation pick.
In terms of what the Vikings and where they're sitting right now, who do you view as the pick that they would make? Are you looking at running back? Because I've heard some of that. Are you looking at what position? Is it safety? Is it running back? I can't figure it out myself, Matthew, and you probably have a better take on this one. So tell me what you're thinking right now, at least, and that might change.
Yeah. Oh, let me add one more thing to the Sam Darnold dynamic real quick, and then I'll get to that, which is that Kevin O'Connell was so clear that J.J. McCarthy's recovery has him on track to start the offseason program that any conversation about like bringing Darnold back because we don't know where McCarthy stands, he made sure to make clear to kind of wash that out. To your question, Pete, I've got defensive tackles circled on my list. I think the Vikings did a great job creating blitzes and getting pressure that way. But as we saw from the Eagles in the Super Bowl, and I don't know how many GMs and coaches I heard say this, like, rushing four, always and forever, the Purple People Eaters, the Fearsome Foursome, the Steel Curtain, whatever defense you want to talk about, rushing four is the best way to win in the NFL. Everybody knows that. The Vikings can rush two currently. And I think they really, really want somebody who could get up the field. Derek Harmon is a name that I heard from Oregon who had a great workout. but I mentioned Darius Alexander. That's number one on my list right now. And after that, like cornerback, who's playing corner? And that's another thing that was a big buzz at the combine was like the Vikings want Byron Murphy back, but apparently there are numerous teams who also want Byron Murphy. So if he leaves, look at their cornerback room. It's basically Mekhi Blackman and no one. So they could look at the corners. It's just that a guy that I'm really interested in is Will Johnson from Michigan and where his stock stands, because I think draft analysts tend to overrate corners a lot. We see those guys fall. Like Terrion Arnold last year was supposed to be a top 12, 15 pick. He ends up going in the back end of the first. I'm thinking of Joey Porter Jr. a couple of years ago. That could provide an opportunity. So those two positions, and then, of course, the guard. Everyone was talking about guards. Which tackles could move to guards? Well, Tyler Booker is the top name there from Alabama, but there's also a really intriguing guy. And when he did his weigh-in today, it was very impressive. Gray Zabel, who comes from North Dakota State, is this enormous tackle there, but people think he could play guard right away. And if you're the Vikings, I mean, look at your offense. What are you missing? You're really missing a impose-your-will element to the offense. We know they could pass, but can they just shove the ball down somebody's throat? Absolutely not, not even close. That kind of starts in the middle. And so I think all those positions are very serious needs, and you can only draft once at the moment. So then the trade down conversation starts to come up. But I think as far as where the Vikings sit, there will be a lot of really good prospects at the positions of need.
Mm-hmm. Holy cow, the Zabel kid is 6'6", 305.
Oh, yeah.
What a behemoth.
Yeah. He's quite large.
Matthew, thank you as always. Appreciate your contribution. Glad you had a good time down in Indianapolis. And it's the best time of the year, right? Now we got a month to speculate what's going to happen. So thank you as always, buddy.
Hey, what's Najarian's 40 right now? What's Najarian running for a 40?
Yeah. Man, if I can get under 5, I'd be happy.
There's no way to get under 5 feet.
That's a pretty to get under. I don't think I ever ran under 5. I think I did. I feel like I got timed in high school, and I was like 5'8" was my 40 time.
There you go.
Pete's a better athlete.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks a lot,
Appreciate it. We'll step aside. We're going to do the fast break coming up next. Ken Pete Najarian, could you even do a 40? Do you think?
No, my knees are shot, man.
Yeah. I don't know that I could. I don't know that even
I could
try.
Do a 4.
All right, we'll do the fast break coming up next.
Morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Joshua.
How are we doing?
Really good.
I just wanted. I think I'm like starting to think about setting up an all media NFL combine and how it would go.
Well, I will be. I'll be on the sidelines watching you guys. Have fun.
Fantastic.
Dave, we never start with you, so I'm going to start with you today.
You're right. Thank you.
Yes, I'm a giver.
We always start with you.
It has been the talker of the week in the NFL world. No, not Matthew Stafford. I mean, yeah, it has. But the tush push. So far, the reaction has been the 50-50 when it comes to keeping it or banning it. Dave, should the NFL consider banning the tush push, or should teams, you know, I don't know, just nutting up and stopping the play? Maybe that's a good idea, too.
Just this is always my thought on things like this, okay? If you're really going to do something, fix the kickoffs. It's awful. The tush push, I mean, how many teams actually even try it? How many teams are successful? Who cares? Why don't you like it? If you want to take your $40 million quarterback and smush him into a brick wall, that's your choice. You're an idiot, but that's your choice. To me, the bigger problem in the NFL is the kickoffs. What they did last year was dumb. It made no sense. It rarely ever – there was almost never a return. I don't know what the numbers are on it. But, I mean, there's bigger issues than the tush push to me that need to be fixed. So do whatever
you want.
Totally
agree. I totally agree with you, Dave. I think that there are three things, and I've been saying this for over a year, and now I'm going to say it again, and I just did it this last week in our podcast. Kickoff, they've got to get it fixed. They've got to change it. They've got to go back in time. And I think I know what the reason is why they did it, but it just doesn't work. And so we've got to figure out something else. Whatever that something else is, has got to be better than what they're doing now. You got to dress three quarterbacks so that there's if you have two of them go down, you still have that third. I mean, I think that just makes sense, and I think you have to dress your guys that you have on the practice squad. But as far as the tush push, I hate it. It doesn't make sense to me at all. And I know there's people on the other side of this, so I respect them. But I will say this. Forever in the NFL, you could not help your player move down the field. And now all of a sudden, we brought in this tush push, and everybody thinks it's okay. I don't think it's okay. Getting behind one of your players to push him in, I'm not really sure that makes sense for me either.
So, Pete, you're saying you're anti-tush?
100%,
okay.
Yes.
You don't like the tush. Got it.
No.
See, I like everything you said, but I'll say that I don't want to dress three quarterbacks because the most exciting thing in baseball is when you're just getting crushed, right? Then you take your left fielder to come in and pitch. I would like the NFL. I want to see your left tackle have to come in and play quarterback. I think it'd be wildly entertaining.
That would be. That actually would be.
Right?
That'd be pretty good.
I like it. I like it.
This week we said so long to a true pillar to the basketball world. She led the way for the Caitlin Clarks and the Angel Reese's of the world, Mr. Pete Najarian. Diana Taurasi, hanging up the old basketball sneakers, three-time WNBA champion, two-time WNBA Finals MVP, was part of the three-peat UConn team from 02 to 04, and a six-time Olympic gold medal winner. Where does Diana Taurasi rank when it comes to women's basketball, Pete Najarian?
How is she not number one? Think about all the things that you just said, what she's been able to accomplish, and you know what? This goes all the way back, probably high school. I don't know her high school, but I will say UConn. The basketball program for the female basketball program there and the men has been absolutely unbelievable, extraordinary beyond words. What they've been able to do, all the championships that they've done, all the great players that have come out of there. But I think by far she stands out as the best that I'm aware of. And somebody probably could push me out to a different one, but for right now I'm going to say she's the best of all time.
I would say yes, she is the best. And here's what I loved about Diana Taurasi. And I say that with a caveat, and I'll take the local angle that Maya Moore's career was too short. I think she probably was the one who could have had she played a full career. What I love most about Diana Taurasi is just the swagger that she had. And, I mean, it's that compete level, right? It's that I'm going to compete against you every single aspect of this game. I'm going to dive to get a ground ball. I'm going to shoot right in your face if you're going to give me an open. I'm going to fight for a rebound. Like, Diana Taurasi's swagger and compete level, I think, is higher than almost anybody I've ever seen play basketball on either side, you know, the women's or the men's side. She just fought for everything all the time, and that's why I think she is the greatest player. And if you look at her total points, I just pulled this up really quick. The person close to her, Tina Charles, has about 3,000 points less than her. So Diana Taurasi scored 10,646 in her career. That's incredible.
Unreal.
Gino Auriemma, one of the all-time GOATs when it comes to women's basketball coaching. Let's not – I don't think he gets mentioned enough in today's, you know, media construct as it is. Truly one of the all-time great coaches in college sports and basketball in general. Dave, it seems like we might be saying goodbye to another basketball star here soon. Since being drafted 11 years ago, Philadelphia 76ers star Joel Embiid has missed 400 games and has played 446 games. He's missed due to injury. We learned just a couple of days ago that the Sixers are shutting him down for the season, a seven-time All-Star, 2023 MVP, two-time scoring champion, and also won a gold medal in Paris. Dave, is it time for Joel Embiid to shut it down completely, or does maybe another team take a flyer on him at this point?
I mean, depending what the cost is, I suppose you could always see, but he really, I mean, he's got 2, 4, 6, 8, 9, he's only 30 years old. I mean, but his body's breaking down. And however, if ever there is a league to sign someone who's going to play a half to three quarters of your schedule, the NBA is it, right? I mean, you can have load management. That's what everybody does. But I don't think he's played a full game schedule ever. Has he? I'm looking at 63 games, 64 games, 68 games, you know, 19 this year. The salary doesn't necessarily match up with what you're getting out of him, so he would have to take less. But I mean, the question is really, does Joel Embiid still want to continue to have that life where you're constantly battling injuries? His body clearly is falling apart. And so I think more I think there'd always be a team that would take a chance on him if the price is right. I think the question is, does Joel Embiid want to keep battling? And, you know, at this point he's 30, but he's not going to have much of a body left by the time he's 40.
At $51 million a year, he might still get a little bit of a look from his end. There's no doubt. But, you know, what separates him from a lot of the big men is he's truly a big man. He's not just a seven-footer. He's a seven-footer who's 280 pounds. So I wonder sometimes, is that part of it? He's not heavy. He's not fat. He's not any of those things. But, you know, you just wonder, is his body, is as it's been falling apart, and it certainly has been, like you said, Dave, I mean, he hasn't been able to play all the games of any season at all. That's a bit of a problem. And, you know, does somebody want to pay him that kind of money, which is what he'll demand? They probably will take a shot. Somebody will. And I think they'll be sorry for doing so, because I think he's at that level now where he's just breaking down every single year. And obviously this year, it's too bad for Philadelphia that he's not able to be out on the court.
All right. One final one real quick, for fast breaks. Pete, I think you're going to love this. We may have Charlie Hustle in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Possibly. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred is reviewing a petition filed on January 8th by Pete Rose's family to have the all-time hits leader in baseball reinstated as an eligible Hall of Fame player. Do you think Pete should be in the MLB Hall of Fame, Pete?
I'm going to say yes, and my reasoning is this. From what we know about the betting and all the rest of the things that have kept him out, that there was not something where he was ever throwing a game. And I think that would be the part that would be the awful part, where you'd have to say, nope, this guy's not part of it. So because of that, I think Pete belongs to be there, and I think the family will probably get their way. I think it's something that a lot of people will be really excited about. It'll probably fuel a lot more attention back to Major League Baseball as well.
Shame on Major League Baseball. Shame on them. And I'll tell you why. We said this when we talked about his passing. I said, if you do it now after he passes, you look even pettier than you possibly could have before. Nothing has changed. His stats have been the same. His bio has been the same. The only thing that happened now is that he passes, and he didn't live long enough to see himself going to the Hall of Fame. If you do this after the fact, and he does deserve to be there, it's a massive slap in the face both to him and his family. It should have been done 5 to 7 years ago, especially with what sports gambling has done in the landscape of all these different sports. It literally looks like you held him out just because you wanted him to suffer. Shame on Major League Baseball for doing it. It makes me so angry to even consider this now, that you're going to wait until he dies to put him in, because he deserved to be there the whole time.
Couldn't agree more.
I'm furious with this. Yep. It makes me so angry.
Yeah, we dove into that when he did pass, too, I remember, because I had the same viewpoint as what you're saying, basically, is don't be cowards and do this after he passed. No. Like, let him actually, you know, enjoy the fruits of this while he's still around.
Enjoy the moment.
Yeah.
He paid his price.
Yeah. It's beyond messed up that they're doing this now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if I was his family, and I know that they're petitioning, and I get it, but if I was his family, when they come to him and go, we want to put him in the Hall of Fame, I'd be like, here's what you can do with it. And I'd put up one finger on my hand. I won't tell you which one. That's exactly what I would do with it. Make them look stupid for it, and then walk away and never talk to him again. Because shame on Major League Baseball. They were petty, and they were not willing to allow someone who was a good baseball player, a phenomenal baseball player, maybe not the best human, but you know what? It is not the Hall of Fame of good human beings. It's the Hall of Fame of good baseball players.
That's right.
Boom.
That's right.
All right.
And
we're running late.
Running late, and when we come back, I'm gonna actually make a production decision here. I'm gonna play an audio clip when we come back from break, and I want you guys to react to it. I'm not gonna say what it is, but I'm gonna play
and
have you guys react to it.
Phenomenal.
Love it. All right,
do it next.
All right.
Great song. All right, Josh, what do you got for us?
What do you got?
All right. So here's the deal. I have an audio clip that I'm gonna play from our reigning king, LeBron James. It's in regards to Ant saying he wants to be the face of the NBA. Here we go.
Yeah. Why do you want to be the face of a league when all the people that, you know, that cover our game and talk about our game on a day-to-day basis, it on everybody? I mean, that responsibility, it's just weird. It's weird energy from the people that, I don't know. But Channing, he said it. He said it perfectly. Couldn't have said it no better. But
and there you go. What are your thoughts on LeBron coming after? What are your thoughts on LeBron coming after the media and their view of players and critique of players in the league? Either one of you guys can jump in.
I just think that, I mean, it's warranted. The biggest complaints in the league today are that players don't want to play, and the proof is in the pudding. Right? Show me the lie. You are every third game you're taking off. Nobody wants to play in the All-Star game. The ratings are down. The tickets prices are up. And guess what? That's why you get paid millions of dollars. It's because so that people can. I mean, that's part of it. People will. Mm-hmm. We'll bag on you. Like, that's the way it goes. So I disagree with him.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that LeBron James is sitting back doing this. He's the leader of load management. He's one of the guys who, you know, I think it's so – I don't understand why more fans aren't mad about it than they are. And I'm – as bad as their ratings are, I'm surprised that they're not even worse, because it's not just LeBron, but there are other players out there. You guys know it, and we all see it right in front of us, these – they take off these games, and Michael Jordan was right when he said it long ago. He said, look, somebody's going to be coming from somewhere with their money in their hands to buy that ticket, and they're not going to be able to see me because I feel like I need to have load management and I sit this game out, and that's their one opportunity ever to get to a game. It doesn't really happen that I'm aware of in any other sport where there's almost a rule that you can do load management the way they've done it, and they've negotiated with this even with Silver. And I think that's where it all starts, at the very top. They need to fix it. Go ahead.
It's interesting to try to take the victim role when you've had career earnings of $528 million. I'm sorry that people pick on you, LeBron. Enjoy going back to your mansion and your cars and the $528 million that you've earned over the course of your career. You poor, poor soul.
The
smallest violin is playing. The smallest violin is playing for you, as my dad would say. Hour number two. We'll be right back. Next.